Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, July 16th, 2026. We'll start with an article on the front page headlined Education, Big School Preview. Kindergarten Boot Camp Helps Youngest Students Prepare by Valerie Wells, Decatur. The first day in big school can be scary for a kindergartner. Older students who know the routines and where everything is are swarming the halls. And here you are, the youngest and smallest, without a clue. But not if you've been to kindergarten boot camp. We have kindergarten camp so the kids have a chance to get used to the flow and the routines without everybody here, said Robertson Charter School Assistant Principal Jaya Lawari. And we get to know them, too, so it's not so intimidating at first. The school has its own bus to pick up the children and deliver them to the school, and they spend 3 days a week for 2 weeks in school with the building to themselves. They practice some of the skills they'll be learning when school starts for real, like learning to print their names, going to breakfast and lunch, learning where things are in the building, and gathering for activities like listening to a story. Some of the youngsters, Lawari said, have never been to preschool, so this is their first experience in school of any kind. And yes, there were a few tears, but the hope is that by next month, when school begins, all the nerves will be a memory, and the little ones will know what to expect and be comfortable. It's just the teacher and her teaching assistant with the kindergartners, Lawari said. They're doing really well. For kindergarten teacher Mashiah Lewis, it's a chance to get to know her new students ahead of time, how to spell their names, what their different personalities are, and teach them the daily routine so they can get right down to business the first couple weeks of school. Robertson has done kindergarten camp the last 3 summers, and it makes those first couple of weeks go much more smoothly, she said. Getting them here and meeting their teachers, it's just been very helpful, Lewis said. We try to do a tour, go over our expectations, and the first day they're already familiar with what we do here. Not all of the 25 students were able to attend the camp, but the ones who did can help the ones who did not, she said. During those first few days when the newbies don't know where to stash their backpacks, or how to find a restroom, the camp veterans step up to show them, which is also gratifying, that little ones are helping each other. Lewis taught third grade for several years before moving to kindergarten, and with her background in early childhood education, that suits her best. She loved her third graders, she said, but there's just something about the little ones and helping lay the foundation for their future education that appeals to her. On a recent day at camp, the kids listened to a story about a pizza party, read by teaching assistant Jody Slaw, whom the kids call Miss Jody, and afterward they created their own pizza with construction paper. The next day, they had a real pizza party. And for the parents who were uneasy about leaving their little ones all day, Lewis sends them an email and messages to let them know the kids are fine. And having fun. Just to ease the parents' anxiety about their kids, she said. For some of them, this is their first time in school, and that's why it's good to have them come in early for camp so they can get used to this. And some of them only did half days in preschool, so for a full day, it's a lot for them. And some of the kids say, "Do we get to take a nap?" And I say, "Nope, no naps. We're in big school now." Economy. Low birth rate could create housing glut by Prashant Gopal, Bloomberg News. For the past decade, scarcity was the U.S. housing industry's most powerful marketing tool. The less there was to buy, the greater the urgency to keep bidding, even as prices hit record highs. Demand was supercharged by record low COVID-19 pandemic era mortgage rates that sparked bidding wars and sent prices soaring, crushing affordability. Recent estimates of the national housing shortage ranged from 1.5 million to 7.3 million units. However, a new era may be dawning in which a shortage of buyers, not homes, will be the defining feature, according to a new white paper from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Starting in 2030, deaths in the U.S. are projected to outnumber births, meaning that without immigration, now throttled by the Trump administration's crackdown, the population will begin to shrink, according to the Congressional Budget Office. The next decade is likely to be quite different, said Mike Frantantoni, the MBA's chief economist and a co-author of the paper. We're moving from a time of rapid household formation to one where there's a slowdown. That outlook is far from certain, given variables such as a future administration that could decide to expand immigration and a stronger labor market that could boost household incomes. For now, affordability remains the market's biggest constraint. Many young adults don't have the money to buy a home, and in some cities, struggle to rent without roommates or financial help from family. Affordability became a rallying cry so loud it bridged the political divide. Last month, Republicans and Democrats worked together to pass a bipartisan housing bill designed to address the shortage in affordable housing and lower costs for buyers and renters. It became law Saturday without Donald Trump's signature or White House fanfare after he abruptly canceled its signing over a stalemate on a voter ID law he championed. Now, the forces that fuel the housing market frenzy are reversing. Mortgage rates in the mid-6% range aren't likely to return anytime soon to the sub-3% levels of late 2020. The country's fertility rate fell to a record low. Baby boomers, the oldest of whom are 80, are poised to start adding to supply as they downsize or die. In addition, immigration is severely restricted, and deportations cut net international migration by half last year, and likely even more this year. Many builders have too much inventory, especially in Sunbelt states such as Texas, Arizona, and Florida, where they've been most active. Multifamily completions hit a 38-year high in 2024, flooding the market just as demand cooled. The rental vacancy rate rose to 7.3% last year from 5.6% in 2022, according to the MBA report. Frantantoni and his co-authors warn that a shrinking population will upend conventional thinking about housing supply adequacy and raise doubts that the supply shortage that defined the post-2010 housing narrative will remain the right framework for the decade ahead. National house prices are starting to adjust. After rising 55% from 2020 to 2025, a shrinking pool of potential buyers has the MBA projecting growth of only 1% in 2026 and flat home prices over the next 2 years. Even if it's not a recipe for a broad market crash, continued construction could cause values to drop in some places. For the mortgage industry, oversupply and falling prices would mean fewer loans for new purchases and less demand for refinancing. Other analysts saw similar evidence of changing demand for housing. An assessment released last month by Harvard University's Joint Center for Housing Studies found that household growth fell to 1.1 million in 2025 from 2 million in 2021. The third straight year of decline, as young people double up with roommates or live with family rather than go out on their own. The demand slowdown is coming, said Alexander Herman, senior research associate at the Joint Center. That's a real thing. Weaker appetite for homes overall doesn't mean everyone can find one. According to the National Low Income Housing Coalition, 11 million extremely low-income renter households compete for just 3.8 million homes within their reach. There remains a severe shortage of units for households in the lower and middle income brackets, Herman said. I don't think we've made any progress on that, he said. If anything, that circumstance has only worsened. A few months ago, Allie Wolf, chief economist at home building consultancy Zonda, spoke before a gathering of clients and laid out a sobering picture. The country still added jobs, but at a slower pace, and the population grew, but at one of the slowest rates on record. A builder asked a question that caught her attention. He said, if job growth is slow, and if population growth is slow, how do we grow our business? Wolf said. Since then, she's marshaled resources to answer it, building an index that ranks nearly 100 metropolitan areas on expectations for long-term demand. Her team is meeting with builders to explain what it means for their regions. When the immigration crackdown began, builders braced for the loss of the workers who frame their houses and pour their foundations. Since then, a drop in apartment construction eased that pressure. We thought we were going to get hit by labor supply, Wolf said, and actually, our biggest concern has been housing demand. District presents tentative budget by Valerie Wells, Decatur. The Macon-Pyatt Special Education District's tentative budget for the 2026-27 fiscal year has been approved. A final form of the budget will be considered at the Decatur Public Schools Board of Education meeting on August 18th, with a public hearing on that budget scheduled for 6:30 p.m. the same day. Decatur Public Schools is the fiscal agent for Macon-Pyatt Special Education District. Macon-Pyatt Executive Director Elizabeth Lang said at Tuesday's school board meeting that several items on the budget have increased notably. The purchased services due to the necessity of sending some students to day programs, students who cannot be served by Macon-Pyatt staff. Social emotional programs, for example, are only available to middle and high school students and not at the elementary level, due to a lack of staff. We have a lot of young kids with a lot of emotional needs, Lang said. Board member Karen Lauritsen asked why it is so difficult to fill those positions. Are people not applying? Lang said that was, indeed, the problem. It's a hard position to fill, she said. You need someone who really wants to be there and work with that population. The special education district also needs to consider a tier of instruction between life skills, which is students with the highest level of needs, and cross-categorical, which is students who spend part of their day in general education classrooms with other students, but that's not really quite right for those students, Lang said. I would like to work on another tier program for those kids who need more of a self-contained, but different than life skills, she said. We're reallocating how we're using staffing. That's my idea. The board also approved a pre-ACT-ACT exam package for students in 9th, 10th, and 11th grade with a pilot program at Stephen Decatur Middle School to allow 8th grade students to participate. Superintendent Nicole Nash Moody said that providing that early testing practice for eighth graders would allow students in middle school to begin thinking about college and careers at an earlier age. And the hope is that will give them a head start on having goals and pursuing them. Board member Mark Reynolds asked if students who don't intend to go to college can opt out of the ACT. Moody said the test is required by the state for students in their junior year of high school, and if they are not satisfied with their score, they can take it again as seniors, but they can't opt out altogether. The hope is to expand the program after the first year of the pilot program, said Edwin Robinson, Director of Teaching and Learning Secondary. Warrensburg Corn Festival kicks off by Jeanette Beckett. Warrensburg. Festivities begin Thursday night at the Warrensburg Corn Festival, with several activities using the fair's namesake. Located throughout the downtown area, highlights include corn shucking contests and corn eating competitions, as well as a cornhole contest. Saturday will feature the Warrensburg Latham Lions Club Parade. Sweet corn will be on sale throughout the weekend. Vendors, inflatable courses, and children's activities also are part of the festival. Live music, including Legacy 5 on Thursday, X Crush and the 77 Experience on Friday, and Lainey Nation and David Nail on Saturday, will be on the Lyle Jones Community Stage. For a list of activities and times, visit the Warrensburg Corn Festival Facebook page. Police. Woman attacked twice by trio, by Danette Beckett, Decatur. Police say a woman was battered twice by suspects who disapproved of her cooperation with law enforcement involving a case against a boyfriend. According to a Decatur Police Department report, officers responded at approximately 2 p.m. Tuesday to the 500 block of West Prairie Avenue for a home invasion. The female victim told police she was awakened by a noise and found three individuals above her while she was in bed. She identified them as family of her boyfriend, said Lieutenant John Quell with the Decatur Police Department. She said the family members were yelling at her as they hovered over her. Quell said the boyfriend had been arrested in a previous incident where she was the victim. The family members hit the victim in the face, he said. She retreated to the bathroom where she called 911. She thought they had left, so she left the bathroom, Quell said. She was battered again in the kitchen because one of them hadn't left. Quell said police made one arrest. The investigation is ongoing. Volunteers sought for Community Impact Days by Danette Beckett, Decatur. Looking for ways to help neighborhoods? The inaugural Community Impact Days will be July 17th through 19th, with ideas and encouragement to pick up litter, plant flowers, mow lawns, and other volunteer activities. No act of service is too small. The City of Decatur, along with a coalition of neighborhood organizations, is encouraging Decatur residents to get involved and make a difference in their neighborhoods. For volunteer ideas, visit the CONO Facebook page. Participants are encouraged to post photos on the social media sites with hashtag DecaturImpact2026. Macon County Board. Manarelli seeks to represent District 1 by Valerie Wells, Decatur. The recent passing of Bill Oliver created two vacancies needing to be filled related to his position on the Macon County Board. One of the vacancies was a spot on the November 3rd ballot to complete the final 2 years of his term representing District 1. The second vacancy was his seat on the board until his replacement is elected. The Macon County Democratic Central Committee has announced that Bruno Manarelli will appear on the ballot to complete his term. Stephanie King, a Democrat who was already on the November ballot for a 4-year term representing the district, was selected to serve on the county board until Oliver's replacement is elected. District 1 includes much of the urban core of Decatur. There currently are no Republican candidates on the ballot for the 2-year or 4-year positions. The deadline to nominate a candidate for the ballot is August 27th. Brian Smith, chairman of the Macon County Democratic Central Committee, said he had contacted the NAACP president, James Farland, to ask if he could recommend a candidate for Oliver's ballot position, as the district Oliver represented is largely minority voters. But McFarland could not provide any names. Manarelli stepped forward and expressed interest, and the committee thought he was a good choice. Manarelli worked on former President Barack Obama's first campaign and said he became disenchanted with politics since that time and stepped back, but recently decided it was time to get back into it. "I think I'll do a good job on the board," he said. Manarelli holds a doctorate in genetics from the University of Illinois. He is a retired colonel in the U.S. Army Reserves in military intelligence, and his last two activations were with the Iraqi Freedom Operation, 2000 EUCOM in Stuttgart, Germany, and as commander, congressionally mandated bioterrorism detachment Homeland Defense in Atlanta, Georgia. Manarelli was born in Italy and immigrated to the United States when he was 7 years old. He is a retired geneticist, microbiologist with the USDA Agricultural Research Service and has political experience serving on the Central Illinois campaigns of Obama and U.S. Senator Dick Durbin. He was also president of American Federation of Government Employees, Local 3247 Union, for 14 years. Heat threatens Parmesan heartland. Rising costs to keep cows' facilities cool, by Sarah Rossi and Oriana Baselli, Reuters. Montecavallo, Medesano, Italy. 50 years ago, farmers in Italy's Emilia-Romagna region used to open the windows in their barns at night during the summer to keep their cattle cool. Today, as heat waves send temperatures soaring to record highs, those windows stay open round the clock to protect the cows and ultimately their milk, the foundation of the area's centuries-old Parmigiano-Reggiano cheese industry. Extreme heat impacts milk's quality and quantity, said Nicola Bertinelli, president of the Parmigiano-Reggiano Consortium, which also runs the dairy farm that his family founded in 1895 on the outskirts of Parma. Costs mount as cheese ages. With temperatures topping 104 degrees Fahrenheit, cows spend more time lying down, eat less, and produce up to 10% less milk, one of the Parmigiano's only three ingredients, alongside salt and rennet. Production of authentic Parmigiano-Reggiano is only allowed in five provinces, mostly in the Emilia-Romagna region, and cows must be fed exclusively with grass and hay grown there. If it doesn't rain, grass doesn't grow, hay cannot be produced, and it's impossible to obtain the milk needed to make the cheese, Bertinelli, 54, told Reuters. He and others have also installed fans and water mist systems, but those extra cooling measures have sent their energy costs soaring. Rising bills also hitting managers of the warehouses where cheese wheels are stored during the aging process for at least 12 months, sometimes 3 years or even longer. More than 500,000 wheels of Parmigiano-Reggiano together are worth more than 300 million euro and are stored in two warehouses operated by Credito Emiliano Unit Magazzini Generali delle Tagliate in the provinces of Reggio Emilia and Modena. During this year's peak heat waves, our daily energy consumption rose by about 30%, MGT Director Giancarlo Ravanetti said. To make our facilities as energy efficient as possible, we have improved our cooling systems and boilers, upgraded building insulation, and increased renewable energy production, he added. We don't want to be the last generation to eat it. The region's climate-controlled warehouses have become institutions, collectively known as the Bank of Parmigiano. Behind their walls, technology and tradition go hand in hand. Each wheel of Parmigiano-Reggiano undergoes strict quality inspections, including X-ray scans, to rule out defects. The cheese is checked weekly by experts who tap each wheel with small hammers, listening for signs of flaws that may have developed during the aging process. The human factor remains key and is the real strength of the entire process, Ravanetti said. Paolo Ganzerli, International Sales Director at Food Group Grand Terre, which posted consolidated revenues of 1.87 billion euro in 2025, echoed Ravanetti's concerns about rising bills. Early winner emerges in the next pro by Bruce R. Miller, Lee Enterprises. The star of the next pro, the Dancing with the Stars reality spinoff, isn't some 20-something dancer, but Judge Shirley Ballas. Mom to DWTS veteran Mark Ballas and the woman who honed Derek Hough's dancing skills, Ballas has the personality and standards that haven't been evident since Len Goodman died. She's a stickler and isn't afraid to spar with her son, who's also a judge, or offer up a catchphrase that could nicely drop into conversation. When Mark tries to argue a point, she offers a quick end of, and the discussion is over. When sloppy footwork shows up, she's quick to point out the rules and emphasize technique is the name of the game. Mom already has a judging job. She's with Great Britain, Strictly Come Dancing, and has a successful pro and teaching career, but she's a delight here. Like the judges on the Great British Bake Off, she knows when to have fun and when to flex her credibility. On the opening episode, hosted by an excessively upbeat Robert Irwin, she, Mark, and Derek looked at 12 dancers, hoping to move up to the mothership in the fall. While one was already on her show, most were dance competition vets who wanted the exposure that comes with the DWTS gig. The six men had to do a jive. The six women were tasked with executing a samba. The worst of each went home, and ultimately, one will move on to the show. This early in, it's hard to tell who has the skill to teach, choreograph, and execute. They're appropriately bouncy, but they don't have the extras that could lift a third-rate celebrity to a mirror ball finish. As the competition spills out, keep an eye on their confidence and how well they play with the judges. That'll be key to naming a winner. And if DWTS decides to add another judge or replace one of the current ones, look to Shirley Ballas to step up. She's the connection and the missing link the venerable series needs. Dancing with the Stars, the next pro, airs on ABC. Digest. GOP unveils $95 billion defense spending plan. Washington. A Republican-controlled committee in the U.S. House of Representatives unveiled a $95 billion blueprint for a new spending package Wednesday that would include $73 billion in new funds over 10 years for defense and intelligence operations. The 47-page budget resolution, which the House Budget Committee is scheduled to consider Thursday, would also authorize decade-long expenditures of $10 billion to incentivize states to implement portions of Trump's Save America Act and $12 billion for agriculture. House Republican leaders hope to pass the budget resolution next week and move quickly to enact it through a budget reconciliation bill intended to circumvent opposition from Democrats in the Senate. Israel aid. The U.S. House of Representatives defeated an amendment Wednesday to cut off aid to Israel, despite nearly half of Democrats supporting it, reflecting a growing rupture between U.S. progressives and Israel over its attacks in Gaza. Well, we'll take a break now and return with the second half of the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, July 16th, 2026. Please stay tuned.